At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 137 of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. We got a good one for you this week. We're talking to Steve Shirk. He's a fan favorite for sure. He is one of our most frequent guests on the podcast as well. He was the very first guest we ever had on way back on episode 19. He's also been on episode 71, and then he was on for the first part of our 100th episode. I thought we should have him on for that one since he was our first guest, and it's always been awesome conversation. I always learn something from Steve. He is a big woods Pennsylvania deer hunter. He's got a guiding service out there as well. He writes for North American Whitetail. There's some cool videos on him on YouTube from the Exodus guys. I know they did like a Whitetail Cribs with him, so you guys should go check that video out as well. And then all his writing and stuff you can see in North American Whitetail. He's got Shirk's Guide Service, which is all his social media, and his presence online is all under that. So you can reach out to him, too, if you guys have any questions or anything. He's always super good about getting back to people, or trying to, at least. I don't want to speak for him, but I know he would say the same thing. So this week, we got to talk to him about some early season stuff. Of course, we went over their last season that they had. They killed a bunch of bucks out there in Pennsylvania between him and all the clients that they had come in, so that was awesome to hear. We talked a bunch of rut stuff. We talked late season. We talked buck bedding. We talked trail cameras. We got into so much stuff on this episode. I think it's really good. I think you guys are going to get something out of it. I know I did. I always come out of these conversations with Steve feeling like I'm a better hunter, or at least that I should be, than I was going into them. So let's get into that here on episode number 137. Before I do, though, don't forget the Big Buck Contest. Registration for that is open until the end of this week, so if you guys want in on it, make sure you get in on it. It's at ridgehunteroutdoors.com. You can find the Big Buck Contest link there, and it's $30 to register. You have a chance to win a Savage 220 if you win the whole contest, and you'll be entered for two raffles that we're doing as well. One of them is a Tacticam trail camera, and the other is a day pack. So if you want in on that, make sure you get in on it before the end of the week. Now, let's get into episode number 137. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, Steve, so it's been a little bit since we talked to you. I think the last one you were on was episode number 100, and it's always well-received when we have you on the show, so I wanted to get you back in here and just kind of catch up because it's been a while. So why don't you give us a rundown of how you did last season yourself, and then how everybody, you know, that came in to hunt with you guys did, and just how your season went overall last year, because I don't think we've had a chance to talk about it yet, and if we have, it's been long enough I don't remember it anyway.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks a lot for having me. It's been a while, but I always enjoy talking with you guys. As far as last year, it was a really good year. Thankfully, I shot a buck in gun season that I specifically was targeting, a big old wide 7 point, that I had even hunted some in archery season, but never was able to connect on. And then guiding wise, we ended up getting 19 bucks, which was a record for us. So it was a really, really, really good year. The only thing for me is, and this isn't really a complaint, but, my hunting time every year is just getting less and less with, with the business and family life. So, you know, that's kind of a new thing for me. You know, when I was younger, heck, I once archery season would start, honestly, I'd at least hardly ever even miss an afternoon. And
right
now I go times and I miss weeks at a time. But what I do still enjoy very, very much is, you know, it's not like basically I'm still hunting, but I just don't pull the trigger. I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, pursue my business and help others with it. And I really do find that just as enjoyable as, you know, being out there myself.
Yeah, that's something that I feel the same way. I actually just had a conversation with one of our guys the other day talking about how, and on our side of it, part of it is the management aspect too, because for one thing, you can do it all year round, but you manage these properties and stuff, and then, like, if you have somebody come in and hunt, or for us now running camera and getting to experience somebody else being out there and actually shooting the deer is almost as fun as shooting one yourself. But
yep.
You mentioned that you shot one that you were targeting last year. I know, again, you know, obviously where you're at, and for people who don't know, out in Pennsylvania doing a lot of big woods hunting, how difficult is it to target a specific buck in that environment? Because I know, like, where we're at, if we're after one particular buck, we can pretty much nail down his home range, although in places he might wander from that pretty far depending on the rut and depending on the particular buck. But we can set up like a food plot where he might be visiting pretty regular, so we know if we sit that long enough, there's a good chance he's going to come by, right? Out in the big woods, I assume it's probably similar, where you can probably nail down kind of a home range, but it always seems to me like outside of some terrain features and stuff, he may go anywhere he wants to and be just fine, so it would be hard to target a specific buck. Is that off base, or, I mean,
you definitely hit the nail on the head. You know, there's certain times when bucks are more patternable and, you know, I guess targetable per se, but then there's other times a year when, honestly, I wouldn't even think about targeting a particular buck, and that's more around the rut. Like, the bucks here in the rut, I mean, yeah, they might have a rut area, but it could be 3 square miles wide. So, I mean, it's definitely a needle in the haystack situation. But I shot my buck in gun season, which is a time when you can target deer, if, especially if you don't have a lot of hunting pressure in the area. In that particular area, I didn't. I knew where the buck was bedded, which really played a huge part. Our gun seasons, and, you know, starts usually always starts the first Saturday after Thanksgiving, and then it ends usually like 2 weeks after that. But that's a time of year when it's like post-rut scenario. The bucks are really wore out. They tend to just really hang close to their bedding areas during the day, and if you know where that bedding is, you can usually be in the ball game. And fortunately, I knew a lot about the deer, and he was where I thought he was, and it all worked out.
Yeah. Do you find that those bucks generally will bed in the same areas, or are you just looking for, okay, I know he was bedding here, he likes this type of structure, type of terrain, and I'm going to find different spots where he might bed that have similar terrain and whatnot?
Yeah, a lot of these deer, it's not like a tiny little spot. Like, sometimes the wind can adjust their bedding, different factors, hunting pressure. Another thing too that I was finding a lot last year is we have a beech leaf disease. It's actually called beech leaf disease, and our beech trees or beech brush per se is really one of the best types of bedding cover we have. But what I'm noticing is these trees are stressed and sort of dying, that they're not holding their leaves as long as what they used to. I mean, years ago, they would hold their leaves right until they started growing new ones in the spring. So what I'm finding is in a lot of these bedding areas, especially once we start getting a little bit that time of year, at least so I felt, I'd say about a half mile square, which is pretty good for big woods. But what really led me to hone in on them was we finally got some winter weather, and given that wind, more so to get out of the wind, it's kind of right off a steep ridge, and it just forms a windbreak, and there's always a couple really good buck beds, you know, given that weather situation. And sure enough, he was bedded right there where I, you know, honestly where I thought he was. And kind of a long story short, I got in there late for the fact that my dog was riding along with me in my truck, which he always comes with me basically wherever I go. And he was laying on my rifle clip. So I looked all morning, even went back to the house, couldn't find my clip. And once again, it's underneath the dog on the back seat, and I didn't know. So I ended up going in the woods late with one bullet in my rifle, and
nice.
ended up still getting the buck. But it was quite the fiasco, but fortunately it all worked out.
Hey, real quick, you cut out a couple times there in the middle of that, so I might have to like trim that up a little bit, but it wasn't too bad, so I was just going to let you know. But anyway.
Yeah, actually, what I can do too is, because I'm down in my basement, and sometimes the signal is a little bit bad, but it's pretty nice outside right now. I'll try going outside for a minute. Let's see how that works.
Okay, that's fine.
If there's something we got to repeat or anything, I apologize, but
no, you're good.
I can go over.
You're good.
But yeah, let's see how this works then.
Okay. The only thing is it cut out about when you were talking about the beech leaves and the disease.
Yeah.
You said it is usually really good bedding cover, and then this is kind of making them lose their leaves, and then it cut out right there, and then it came back in when you started to tell a little bit about your buck.
Yes. Yeah, so I'll kind of touch back on that. So we have a disease. It's called beech leaf disease. It started in like around 2017, and at that time of year, beech brush is probably the best bedding cover we have, and it's very thick, but what makes it attractive is it holds its leaves pretty much right until spring when it grows new leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So the deer are really attracted to that thicker cover, because pretty much all other cover types at that time of year have opened up because, you know, all the leaves have. And once again, it's something I really rely on a lot, but the problem is with this new disease is it's dropping its leaves a lot more sooner than what it usually does. And like, there's a lot of areas that I have that or have hunted in the past that I go in there thinking the bucks should be there, and then it's just wide open woods. So, and as it kind of seems like during gun season, when we start to get snow and the colder weather and the rain, a lot of these leaves are dropping then. And mm-hmm. it's just kind of like, it's very unpredictable sometimes where these deer are headed. Versus years ago, I mean, it was a no-brainer. You knew
right.
Some of these pockets of cover. So, you know, that's the biggest factor in, you know, making some of this bedding stuff more challenging to find some consistency in it.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that's your most consistent thing that you can rely on when it comes to patterning these bucks is where they're bedding? Because obviously they're not, at least from my understanding of it, they're not going to the same food source all the time. Like here, they might go out to the same bean field or they might go out to the same cornfield pretty much every night. So you can kind of pattern them based on food and bed. Is it more so just the bedding there, or will you find sometimes that they feed in the same spot pretty regularly?
Most of the time it's just bedding. However, you know, there's scenarios where like you might only have one certain area where oak's produced, or you might have a young clear cut that's full of browse that is the primary food source. I mean, it really just depends on the area and, you know, mm-hmm. the habitat that's there, but the bedding tends to be more consistent than anything else. And another thing is our deer, you know, outside of the rut, our mature bucks are quite nocturnal as far as venturing away from their bedding areas and these mm-hmm. areas where they feel more secure in. So it's definitely more challenging to get on them once you get away from these bedding areas.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're the closer you can get, the more you're increasing your odds of actually seeing them on their feet in daylight, I would guess.
Absolutely. And like gun season, unless it's like a real remote food source, you know, I rarely see bucks in gun season, you know, because that's when I mm-hmm. had my best time to hunt last year. But I rarely see bucks that time of year on food during the daytime. And another thing is in a lot of these bedding areas, these bucks aren't making a ton of sign, and hunters are kind of overlooking that. But mm-hmm. in the feeding areas, there's sign everywhere, and everyone's hunting that sign, yet most of that's made at night. So it's one of those things, if you don't know where some of these bedding areas are, maybe you don't have much history with areas, you don't scout enough, then you'd have no clue there's big deer living in some of these pockets of cover. But
right.
you just have to do the homework to know it.
Yeah, that's something. In certain areas around here where there is a lot of pressure, you kind of have to do similar things as far as getting close to the bedding. Sometimes maybe uncomfortably close, depending on whether you can let that deer sit and still feel like you have a chance of killing them if you just play the long game. But if you do have a lot of pressure, that might not be the case. So you do have to get a little bit tighter to their bedding to find them in daylight. But in a lot of situations where there's not as much pressure or you have a decent piece of private ground here, you know, you'll see those bucks, especially that time frame you're talking about, shortly after Thanksgiving. that's when they really start showing up on food sources in the daylight. Yeah. You know, the bean field that's dried down or the standing corn, or even if you've got a good green field, you'll start seeing those. If we get a really harsh cold front especially, you'll see those bucks out pretty early in the daylight in those fields. So it's just cool how much different that is. But one thing that does seem very similar is the sign that you're talking about. And that, I think, is probably misunderstood across the board as far as hunting sign and what type of sign to hunt, because a lot of times around food sources.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Versus even here, most of that sign is being made at night, because a lot of times you're talking about destination food, and they're getting to that after dark most of the time. So they're out there, yep. And that's when you see all these scrapes open up on field edges. That's where you see a lot of rubs and stuff. Obviously, there's going to be a bunch of tracks out there because there's a large number of deer feeding in that field. So I think that happens probably across the board as far as just hunting the wrong kind of sign, or, you know, hunting sign in general.
Yep. No, that's totally the situation. You know, come gun season here, you can hunt some of these areas in the rut, because I'm talking around the food. Generally, the does here will stick much closer to the food, especially even with their bedding, versus bucks. Honestly, I've noticed where bucks will go 2 miles away from a primary food source. So In the rut, yeah, you can get away with hunting that sign, but then post rut or even early season, it just seems like if you're not near that core bedding area, you know, it's all nighttime activity.
Yeah, that's very similar too. Usually we see the does. If they've got cover or some kind of screening up next to, like on a certain edge of a field, they'll bed 20 yards off of that food source just so they don't have to go very far. And then the bucks are going to bed off of those. Like you said, sometimes hundreds of yards or miles, depending on where you're at from that particular place. They just seems like they don't like the stress from the does as much.
Oh, that too. And I mean, they're so concerned always about their security that they just want to be somewhere where they know that they're safe and have nothing to worry about. And they'll, if the case is where they got to lay there all day and listen to their bellies growl just to survive and come in and feed at night, I don't think they have a problem with that.
Right. And not dealing with other bucks is a big thing too, but also you think about, and I don't know what kind of predation you guys have out there, any issues with it, but especially here, a lot of that even happens around food sources, because the predators are smart enough to know that they have to end up there at some point too. So I think that probably plays a role as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they hunt a lot, you know, a lot just like us. I think they're going to focus more on quantity than, you know, running some buck down that's all by himself, you know, 2 miles away from any other deer. So they're going to go where the big pockets are, and certainly that's going to be near food.
Yeah. If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. Email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com. Or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. You'd mentioned, we'll backtrack a little bit here. You'd mentioned when you went in and after your buck, you couldn't find your rifle clip and your dog was laying on it. And you went in with one bullet in the gun. That, I forget which guest we had on recently, but we were talking about kind of the same thing. It seems like such a high percentage of the time, and maybe it's not, maybe it's just we remember those more, but it does seem like that's the kind of days when stuff happens. Like when you when you forget something, or you got to go back to the truck three times because you keep forgetting, you know, two or three different things that you really need, or something goes wrong. It starts pouring down rain and you think it's not going to work. You get out there and it stops. Like, that seems to be the days when stuff happens.
Yep. And honestly, going out there that morning, I don't want to say I was confident, but I was just like, you know what, Lord, in the past I've seen where I've had these hectic days, you came through and sent one by me. So yeah, I've totally had that happen. And you know, that's the thing too, is like, you have to always keep a positive mindset. And I'll be honest with you, I was pretty frustrated, but yet I didn't give up. I said, well, it is what it is. I'll hunt with one bullet and try to make that shot as best as I can. And you know, I lost about a half an hour hunting time. And, you know, it's always all about just going with the cards that, I guess, the hunting gods give you, whatever they deal you. You know, you make the best of the situation, you hunt hard, and, you know, and just pray for a good outcome. And a lot of times, you know, a good outcome isn't having success, but no matter what, I'm always enjoying myself out there and always learning too. That's what's one thing some things I really love about hunting.
Oh yeah. If you're not learning while you're out there, then you're probably not paying enough attention. But anytime you can get out and hunt and climb up a tree and climb back down safely, or get out there and sit in a blind and just enjoy what you're doing and then get back to the truck and make it home, that's definitely a success. It's all relative, you know. Of course, we all want to shoot the big buck every time we go out, but it's just not the case. So, and I don't think it'd be as much fun if we did, you know.
No, absolutely not. And one thing I will mention, just because we touched on, you know, the deer I killed, and I just feel it's important to mention kind of my strategy, but something that I think's a little bit new, and it's probably might be more of just a mountain type thing, is, you know, what I've done in the past is I heavily scout, you know, bedding areas in the off season, and wherever I mark buck beds, you know, I pay close attention to those areas. You know, I'm marking them on my phone, on my Spartan Forge app, and kind of what my strategy is in gun season and what I was doing was I would try to get into some of these bedding areas well before daylight. And that's really what made me frustrated was I got to that location, you know, a half hour after daylight when I had planned on watching that particular bed with my rifle. You know, I wanted to be there way, way sooner. So getting there late, long story short, I ended up bumping the buck out of his bed, but I shot him. But my point is, I think it's I don't want to say a secret tactic, but probably something a lot of other hunters aren't doing, is it's extremely effective when you know where particular beds are within bedding areas, especially in the mountains, because you can use topography to kind of approach those beds without those deer seeing you. And like, that's what my strategy was going to be that whole week of hunting, because I didn't have any guiding that week. And I really think it's just an absolute deadly strategy, because almost all your mature deer are bedded up that time of year, you know, in that post rut period. But I mean, in rifle season, I mean, you can be 200 yards from a bed, and as long as you know exactly where that bed is and then you use the topography just right, you can peek over a ridge or, you know, look over a knoll and catch some of these beds and see these deer when they don't see you. And that's really what led me to getting that deer is that strategy. But I really think it's a deadly way of doing things in the mountains.
Oh yeah, I could see that here too. If you know where those bucks are bedding, and specifically within that bedding area, I mean, you can use, whether it's fence rows or big CRP fields or brush or blocks of timber, anything like that. And again, especially during gun season, you just have to get within a couple hundred yards, and if you can sit and watch that bedding area, even if you're getting there earlier, watching, hoping he's coming back to it, or expecting him to already be there, that I could definitely see that being huge. And then even if it's not gun season, even if you're bow hunting, and this is something kind of maybe we could transition to early season as well, but because it's kind of similar, at least where we're at in the early season, the bucks aren't necessarily leaving their beds as early. They don't have a lot of reason to yet. If you know where that buck's bedding, where he tends to be positioned, you can slip in there and get closer. I'm not saying you got to get within bow range of him, but if you can get within, you know, 100 or 75 yards, now he's only got to make it 50 before dark.
Yep.
Instead of if you're 300 yards away, now he has to make it 170, you know. So if you can use that stuff for bow hunting setups as well, even an early season coming up.
No, that's exactly right. And that's kind of been, you know, one of my favorite ways of hunting early season bucks is just knowing where they're bedded and, you know, getting as close as you can to those beds. The tricky thing doing that, especially in the mountains, is inconsistent wind. You can study the wind, you can check the weather and find what direction it's supposed to blow, and then you get into some of these areas and it's constantly swirling, or honestly it only takes one little puff in the wrong direction, you know, to ruin it for you. But overall, that's honestly the way that I think you got to hunt early season and late season. Not saying everywhere in the country, but, you know, in a lot of different places, especially areas where there's good amount of hunting pressure. You got to know where these deer are bedded, and you got to know how to hunt those beddings correctly, you know, just in order to see that deer moving during daytime hours.
Is that the biggest thing you see with pressure, is they stay laid up for longer periods of time, and then that's why they become kind of nocturnal, because they're just not moving as much?
That's absolutely right. As soon as they feel heavily pressured, they just go lay up. They quit moving. They feel way more secure when they're in a bedding area. Plus, they just feel more secure holding up versus moving around. Mm-hmm. And it's honestly, to some deer, I really think, like some of our older, mature bucks that have been around several seasons, I think it's almost like a light switch shift. Like, okay, all of a sudden I'm seeing a bunch of hunters, guns are firing off. And I think they already have it planned. Like some of these deer go to the same areas year after year, you know, the same hideouts. And a lot of them are in places that I don't care, even if you have the best strategy, if you're the best hunter, but they have certain places where they have everything in their favor versus cover, wind direction, topography. I mean, you name it, and they just become extremely hard to kill, and that's how they get old and big. But I truly think a lot of hunters underestimate the intelligence of a mature buck. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, they're not just out there roaming around the woods and getting lucky and surviving. Like, they truly have, you know, intelligent game plans as far as, you know, eluding hunters and surviving another year. I mean, what is in their mind? I think we would just be just shocked to know, holy cow, I can't believe what that deer actually did and how he understood hunting pressure and the game plan he had just to survive another season.
I definitely think that even goes both ways. I think there are times where we probably overestimate, and one of the examples that I use a lot of times is like with scent and stuff. If you're using scent attractant or something, everybody talks about like the preorbital gland scent that you got to have for mock scrapes and stuff. Well, I've been using our tarsal scent and spraying on a branch and using that for years now, and I don't think the deer smells that and thinks, gee, how'd that deer get his tarsal gland way up here on this branch? You know, like it's just, there's another deer. But on the same side of it, we definitely underestimate their ability to stay alive, because that is what they do every day. It's not like us where, you know, we get up in the morning and all we're worried about is getting to work on time and what we're going to eat for lunch and who we're going to talk to and trying to avoid certain people throughout the day or whatever. They're every waking moment, and even when they're sleeping, they have to bed so strategically that something won't kill them while they're sleeping. Like, that is what they do, is survive. And there's so many things out there trying to kill them that they have to be that intelligent when it comes to that, or they won't make it.
Yep. No, and you kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, I don't think their brains are as expanded, you know, like ours. Like, they're not able to really process a lot of different things, but what they process way better than what most of us even know is that survival. I'd say 90% of a mature buck's brain is all about survival, and a lot of it especially is eluding hunting pressure. And it's just amazing how intelligent they are. And but that's one of the reasons why, you know, because one reason why I like hunting a lot, and there's a lot of them, but one of my favorite reasons is it's just such a challenge to hunt and pursue mature deer, and just to every now and then, and maybe not even every season, but to outsmart one or just do something where you have success on one, like that, being able to do that and to have that accomplishment and just enjoy the feeling of doing it. Like, that's one of my favorite reasons why I hunt mature deer.
Yeah, that's something that we talk about fairly regularly, I guess, is the kind of setting your expectations and your sights on what you want. And for me, the trophy animal is not always the one with the biggest rack, because I get way more satisfaction about hunting and getting in on a big mature, for us, 4.5+ year old deer, 5.5+ year old deer that scores, let's say, 125, 130, than I would a 3.5 year old deer that scores 150, 160, And I'm not saying I wouldn't shoot the 175-inch 3 year old. It's just around here, especially, and I'm sure you see the same thing, those immature bucks are just, they don't have that experience yet, and they don't have the extra years and dealing with the hunters.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com. Upwork.com.
And that survival instinct. So usually, like 2.5 and 3.5 year old bucks around here, number one, they're a dime a dozen. And you could go out there, and if you know where they're at, you could kill them about every time you went hunting. And to me, and for some people, that's great. Like, I got no problems with them doing that. But just for me personally, I enjoy the challenge of trying to locate the older, mature buck that's been around the block, that knows. And then when you do finally get them, it's like you've outsmarted one of the smartest things out here, as far as when it comes to just staying alive.
Yep, no, that's totally true. And for me, like, I've turned down like a lot of hunts over the years where outfitters from Iowa and other places said, would you like to swap hunts for free? I mean, I've literally, people would probably just say, Steve, are you kidding me? Like, why would you do something like that? But like, and it's not that I want to say other places are easier, but I know how challenging it is here. And I know that I don't have a lot of time anymore, but yet all my efforts in the off season, when it comes for, my own personal goals, like, I put in so much work here that like, when I do get time, and I know how challenging it is here, I don't want to be anywhere else but pursuing this challenge and the goals that I've put in place. Versus, yeah, there's probably places in the country where there's a good chance you hunt a week and maybe even kill 150 plus inch deer or better, but I'd rather hunt my butt off here all season, and the last day possibly have an encounter, and just one encounter with like 120 inch 6 year old. Like, I'd rather have that experience.
Yeah, I agree. And it's something too, even just being in the same location, like, we'll have people say, hey, you ought to come out and hunt with us and come hunt this place or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you can just to me, maybe sometime. But to me, it's more about, I want to hunt the deer that I've tried to manage and I've tried to improve properties for, even if it's just a permission property. Like, I've spent the time going in there and scouting and figuring that property out. And to me, that means more than just, oh, hey, there's a guy who's got a really good farm and he's got these really great deer, and if you sit here long enough, one is going to walk by and you can shoot it. That's fine for some people, but for me, I feel like I'm very similar to what you're saying. It's more about the whole process of it, and then getting that, the opportunity at that mature buck that you've put the work in for. And I think it's definitely more rewarding, especially kind of maybe as you mature as a hunter, that there's, we talk about a lot, that natural cycle of a hunter where you go from, you know, killing your first deer, and as you grow, you kind of want different things out of the sport. And I think that's just kind of where I'm at. It's, I want the challenge of, you know, finding a mature buck that I've put the work in for, and then I want to get him on the ground. That's what I want to do.
Yep. No, I'm in the same boat as you. I'd rather work my butt off all season and maybe not even have success versus go to some place where it's almost guaranteed and hunt one day and kill the biggest buck of my life. Honestly, that wouldn't be that much of a season for me. I enjoy the grind and the learning experience and even the failures, the challenges, everything that comes along with that. I mean, that's what I'm all about.
Yeah, I think you're probably similar to me too, is it's not, we don't need to do it for so we can have something to post on Instagram, because I think that probably happens a lot where guys just want to go hunt somewhere so they can kill something so they can put the picture on social media. And it's just, for me, that's not what I want to do.
Exactly. Yep.
Now, when I kill, if I ever kill a 200-inch deer, I promise you'll know about it. But
same here.
But that's not why I'm doing it either. So our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market, and I'm really excited to use it this season and for years to come. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results. Back on the early season topic a little bit, I know last year, and we've got a decent amount this year too, but I don't think it's quite as good as last year, we had just a bumper crop of acorns, and that really affected where the deer were hanging out in our early season. So our food plots weren't as hot, the ones that did survive all the heat and whatnot that we and drought that we had last year. But a lot of the bucks were staying more back in the timber, and if they were moving in daylight, it was not very far because the acorns were plentiful. And we see that every year. It's one of their preferred browse, obviously. Even in an agricultural area like we're in, if there's a good acorn crop here, those bucks are going to be back in the timber. They don't have to move as far from their beds. And, you know, even a lot of times, we will see them on those years where we do have more acorns. Their bedding might shift a little bit just so, you know, if there's a good secluded place where they feel safe and there's acorns close by, they're going to take that spot over the other one. Where on a normal year, they might just only worry about the seclusion. I don't know. Do you see that when you do have those big acorn years or anything like that? Does that affect your guys' early season?
You know, I would say it does as far as the amount of movement. Like in the early season, there's nothing more important. Well, I don't want to say more important because we kind of touched on a mature buck security and survival is super important. Mm-hmm. But also building his body for the rut and moving as minimal as possible, yet still, you know, adding more and more fat reserves to his body each and every day. Like in an ideal situation, he's going to look for an area where he has everything that he needs. He doesn't have to cover a ton of ground to fill his belly. I mean, that just makes the perfect scenario for a mature buck to get ready for the rut versus not really the perfect scenario sometimes, you know, for a hunter to have success. But one thing the other day scouting, I was in an area where there wasn't a lot of oaks, but I came upon, you know, like five or six of them, and it was pretty neat. I looked at the ground and I'm like, man, I see a lot of shells, and you could even see where something, I mean, they're eating the acorns, but you could just see like maybe the outer shell or the upper shell there would just have a little nick in it. And I was like, I really think it's a deer because squirrels tend to chew the shell a little bit more than deer. A deer will just kind of pick it up and the shell just pops off. But my point was all of a sudden I looked up and then here's this buck, just pretty good buck, probably like a 4-year-old. He just jumped right up out of his bed and ran away. But my point was, and where I'm getting to is I truly believe that that buck had hung there all day and maybe even had kept coming back to there, because I knew there was a lot of acorns falling, but most of them were eaten up. And I really think that that was the only place that deer was feeding and bedding, was real tight to that location. He had everything he needed. Water wasn't even all that far away. And it was just a perfect environment for an early season buck to live in. He had the food, he had the water, he didn't have to move much. And I think that's what's happening a lot this time of year in areas with that, you know, similar type of food and cover situation.
Yeah, that's the thing about early season too, is there is so much cover available and so much browse available, it seems like. And I'd assume in the mountains it's the same way, as far as just having the available browse and cover in different locations of bed, so they don't have to go very far. And I think that it's, again, I don't know if it's intelligence or just their natural instincts. I do think they, I don't know if they understand it, but I think their body at least understands the trade-off between having to travel for food versus being able to, how much they can eat. And then, like, if they're traveling so far to eat that they can't make up for the distance they had to go, they're probably going to find somewhere else to either bed or feed, right? Because, like you're saying, they got to build those fat reserves. So if they're burning more than they're gaining, they're probably going to find somewhere else. And if you could find those locations where they kind of do have a little bit of everything and you can get in there safely, that's probably a lot of times where you're going to find them. I'd assume just what kind of what you're talking about there, similar to the mountains.
Yep. Now, I will say a lot of my early season bedding areas are generally full of food. Sometimes it's just a lot of browse because there's a lot of green, you know, foliage that time of year. And and once again, like, I truly believe this time of year, I mean, the amount of food intake that especially a mature buck is putting in his body is probably more now than, you know, almost any time of year. I know sometimes they say, you know, in the late season, they'll really try to put the calories back on. But what I've found up my way is, you know, given a hard winter or, you know, just hunting pressure, that they do struggle in the later season to build a lot of that back. But once again, it's all about, right now, it's all about food and bedding. But the closer you can combine, you know, food and bedding together, I really think the more likely you're going to be able to get on mature deer, you know, especially in daytime hours this time of year.
Yeah. So do you normally see different bedding areas based on the time of year? Because I know where we're at, and this is kind of plays into what you were just talking about, definitely in the more agricultural areas, or if you can put in big food plots in the Midwest, they feed a ton in the late season because the food is available. I would assume out where you're at, there's just not as much available in the late season, so that probably has a lot to do with them feeding more this time of year, because this is when they have it, so they're going to get probably feed even more than our deer would. Excuse me, because they know that it's not going to be there. But do you find that they will bed in different places based on the time of year, or does the hunting pressure kind of keep them into one location for most of the season? And then on that, if it does change, when do you kind of start paying attention to those bedding areas during your summer scouting? Is it now? Can you pretty much know where they're going to be this time of year based on where they're bedding all summer? What's that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a lot of the above. I mean, it just depends on the area. It depends on what kind of bedding cover it is. Depends on what kind of food is in the area. I mean, I think what we're going to see a lot this year is, like, right now, I do think we're, you know, where there's a good acorn crop, if it's a very wide expanse of acorns, not just like a pocket of six or eight trees and, you know, in an area that might not be that far off the beaten path, but in some of these more remote areas, I think the bucks are going to bed right near the food source, not have to move much at all. But then, you know, come gun season, it's just usually completely different. A lot of our, you know, our oak hardwoods are fairly open. That time of year, you usually don't have good cover in there. And usually what I find is the bucks feel, you know, insecure in those areas. They usually bed, you know, pretty far away, you know, where there's not much hunting pressure, where there's better cover. And then once again, they'll come into those areas at night. So most of the scenario this year is going to be different early season to late season.
Okay. So is that something where, do you see their summer bedding change even into their, when they kind of make their fall shift? Because even their home ranges around here will change a lot based on when they shed their velvet and stuff. Is that similar out there?
there's usually two or three different bedding areas that I find bucks, you know, shift into. Some of them, honestly, which is kind of nice. Some of them only have like two different areas. It doesn't mean like they're small areas, but seems like some bucks have a summer and winter bedding area.
Mm-hmm.
If that bedding area, you know, has, you know, conducive habitat to winter conditions, you know, it's got to usually have some good thermal cover like hemlock and pine. But they tend to prefer to just have two here. However, there's some bucks that seem to have a summer area, they'll have a rut area, and then they'll have a wintering area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know why some bucks have three and some bucks have two. Maybe even some of them have four, to be honest with you. It's just kind of like an individual thing. But overall, really, I find that if I'm getting a mature deer on camera in the summer, I generally find them maybe within a half mile of that summering area in the wintertime. And that's talking bedding as well.
Mm-hmm. That's so on your scouting part. I know we're going to shift gears a little bit here. You run a bunch of trail cameras, right?
Yep.
You run, I know because of the cell service and stuff like that, you run a bunch of traditional cameras, but you do have some cell cameras, correct?
Oh yeah. Every year I'll have between 10 and 20 cell cameras, and they are putting more towers up in our area, which is kind of nice. I'm probably going to start using more cell cameras, but it's still way more, I'm still using way more traditional than cell.
Okay. Do you notice any difference in the deer's reaction to a cell camera versus a regular camera based on your pictures and or anything you've seen? Do you think they pay attention to one more than the other?
I honestly do think that cell cameras are spookier to mature deer than traditional cameras.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different theories about it. I really can't say I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, like, there's a lot of deer that I'll get on cell cam every year, and I might only get them in that spot once. However, my traditional cameras in that general area, because, you know, sometimes what I have to do is find like a high elevation where I can get cell service, put a cell cam there. But as soon as I get down over the ridge, I get no cell service. And then I put traditional cameras,
mm-hmm.
and I'll get the deer more on the traditional ones than I do the cell. And it's just kind of made sense. So I do think cell cameras are definitely spooking them. I don't know why, but you know, I don't mean to beat around the bush, I guess, but I guess to just answer it simply, I do find that they're not as effective as traditional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. There's a lot of different theories on them, and I'm not sure a lot of them make a ton of sense. But it does seem like, from the pictures I had, that they notice them more, and I don't know if it's because, you know, some people think it might even be something as simple as the antenna is sticking up out of them. It just looks different. One theory that I have, and I don't know if it's true or not, it's probably not in your case because, like you said, you're putting them either in similar spots or just in areas where I don't think this would be an issue. But I do think a lot of guys are more intrusive with where they put their cell cameras because they know they don't have to go in there and check them. So they're putting them in locations where deer aren't used to seeing something odd. So
yep.
Maybe that has something to do with, like, if you go stick one right in the middle of a bedding area and you're not careful about where you put it, I think maybe that plays into it some. But I definitely, some of the cameras that I've put up, I do notice them. They kind of, it almost seems like they look at them longer or something. You get more pictures of them coming up and checking on them. But then there's other deer too where it doesn't seem like it bothers them at all. So,
I totally agree. Yeah. I honestly think it's an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to ever tell anyone not to run cell cameras, because just in the past two nights, I've had two, you know, major big bucks on cell camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they still work. And, you know, the thing about cameras is like, I don't always make decisions based on pictures. Like,
right.
A lot of, or even like based on the pictures of today or yesterday or last week. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of my decisions are based on multiple years of history and intel with the area, in particular deer in that area. It's more like years in advance when a lot of that, you know, a lot of the pictures and the data, you know, start to come into place and have,
yep.
you know, an impact on the success. I think there's too many people that struggle with trail cameras. Like, oh, I got a picture of a big buck. I better go there tomorrow. And honestly, that might be the only time you get a picture of that buck in that spot all year. And usually you're chasing them versus getting ahead of them. And it's just, you know, the whole trail camera thing, I love trail cameras. I would never not want to use them. But, like, you have to learn how to understand them. You have to learn how to, like, weigh out making the right decisions off of them. You can't just, you know, jump the gun every time you get a big buck picture.
If you guys plant food plots and you don't know who Grandpa Ray Outdoors is, you need to look them up. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for white-tailed deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to planting, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They were started in 2015. John, the owner, has been in the business since 1991. So with that knowledge that he's acquired, he's going to be able to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. We've used tons of their seed on client properties, on our own properties, and the results have always been as good, if not better, than advertised. That's why we partnered with them in the first place. If you want to, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com, use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. You guys need to go check them out if you care about getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food plots. I've fallen into the trap a little bit, especially since I've started running sale cameras, is if I'm not getting pictures of anything that I would like to hunt, I will not go to that spot. I might go somewhere else, or I might even just take the day off when I probably really should be going in there, because just like you're saying, there's a couple different levels to it. One of them is that cameras only look in a specific direction. There's so many different ways that a deer could get through there, maybe be in front of your stand, even if that camera is facing in front of your stand, and you never get a picture of him. I've had that happen plenty of times where I've shot deer or had deer out in front of me while on stand that I never got pictures of. But another thing is what you're talking about with those year-over-year data, using that versus the real-time information, because a lot of times when you do get the picture of them, it's already too late, right? You kind of have to – you want to be there when that picture is taken, or you kind of want to be the camera to some extent. Just like you said, it might be the only time that buck is there. So if you wait until you do get that picture, it may have already be too late. And how often does a mature buck do the same thing 2 or 3 days in a row? Like exactly the same thing anyway, right?
Yep, exactly. I mean, and I'll just mention a couple different scenarios where I'll hunt an area or maybe an individual deer, like based on not getting pictures in that particular spot. Like number one is during like that seeking phase of the rut, say like, you know, maybe the last 7 to 10 days of October, I could honestly care less. If I feel we have good weather conditions that time, like I could care less about hunting a travel corridor where I've had recent pictures of a mature buck. Like I got spots every year during that seeking phase that just randomly, it might not be the same date, but in that same week to 10 days, I'll get 4 or 5 big bucks, you know, coming through a funnel, a pinch point, or a travel corridor. It's just during that time frame. A lot of these spots like are absolutely dead at any other time of year. But I know from putting that camera there every year that during that phase, something shows up. So like that's a scenario. I don't have to go in there, check that camera, and wait and see. I just know that something's going to come through eventually. And then secondly, too, another classic scenario is a lot of times, you know, I'll just be getting does on camera, you know, at certain phases during the rut, and, you know, man, I'm not getting any bucks at all. But like, I love that scenario just because I know that eventually any day one of those does is going to come in heat, and I better be there when it happens versus sometimes you wait too long and one of those does comes in heat and they'll pull that doe right out of that area, you know, if there's other competition. So a lot of times, like I said, I'm not waiting for that picture. I'm predicting the picture, and I'm just really using these cameras for future reference versus the season that I'm hunting right now.
Yeah, definitely a proactive approach instead of being reactive to your cameras. And I will say, just on the flip side of that too, I have had some scenarios where I've gotten a picture of either like a buck going into a certain area like at midnight the night before.
Yep.
And then whether I went back in or not, I either see that buck the next morning or have a picture of him going back. Or in that rut scenario you're talking about, I have had, and I think this is especially in like a lot of really thick areas where they can get in there and kind of hide from each other and run around for a considerable amount of time before maybe they meet up. But like when a hot doe goes into a certain farm, she could be there and draw in a handful of bucks over the next, you know, I've seen it for the next 24 hours where she will hang out. Even though it's not a very big farm, I do think it's so thick that she's got so many little hiding spots in there. So if I see a hot doe on a camera with a buck or two coming in after she went through, like I know, okay, that next morning there's a good chance they will still be there so I can go in and hunt them. But I definitely think across the board, the more consistent way to do it, if you want to have more success regularly, is to take that proactive approach. And that's why, you know, we always talk about keeping those pictures, put them in a file on your computer or something. And you don't have to be incredibly organized about it, but just if you've got, okay, a file full of racked bucks on this farm or this camera or whatever, and then you can go and sort them by the date, and you can really start to put a picture together of when you start seeing mature bucks on that property or in a specific location based on time of year. And it's amazing how often it will be in the same window season after season after season.
Absolutely. And I'll mention another scenario too. We're talking how to, you know, base hunts off trail cameras, you know, and this is a mistake I've made a lot in the past is, you know, a lot of times I'll go in and check a camera that maybe I haven't checked in months. And like, you know, I'll look back and man, like 4 to 10 days ago, the spot was on fire and, you know, all kinds of, or maybe multiple bucks, several shooters, does, and then, but it's starting to die off some, or maybe it's died off completely. And I think some people are like, wow, you know, a week ago this was on fire. It's a great area, but most of the time in that card pull, that means that area is done and you're too late.
Mm-hmm.
In the rut, like if you're hunting areas where there's does and you're kind of focusing on being around that hot doe, you got to be like aggressive and you got to be in that hot area, because it's what I find, especially here, is like our bucks will just keep roaming and roaming until they find that next hot doe. But it seems like a lot of our areas where there's a hot doe, like that's where all the bucks are. And then the next ridge over, when another doe comes in heat 3 days later, then they're all over there. Like it just seems to be during that breeding phase, if you're not right in the game when it starts, you're not in it at all. It, you know, you can't base your hunts in the rut, reading trail cam cards. Like it's got to be within the past few days or you're too late usually.
Yeah, it's just so random. And again, it goes back to just year over year. There's some, and I think we might have talked about this on a different episode, but there's some studies been done and some people think that maybe specific doe herds will come in at similar times every year. And if you can kind of figure that out, if you have a lot of times here we'll see the same five or six does in a doe family group, and they will stay in the same spot. The general rule of thumb, at least where we're at, is does, when they bed, when they find a place they like, they're not going to leave, like until they die or something just absolutely runs them out or something changes in the environment. They're not going to leave. So they could be there every year. And if you do see bucks in that area in that same window every year, there's a good chance that it's because one or two or maybe three of those does are all coming into heat at similar times every season. And that's something where you can, as random as it is, maybe you can make it a little better, but you have to be there. You can't, like you're saying, you can't wait for that card pull and then see how crazy it was 2 days ago and now everything's gone. There's nothing left around.
Absolutely. And I mean, another good strategy for me in the past is if you're kind of patient and you're not over hunting areas, you can, and I guess too, I always got to make sure it's a secure area, but you can just hunt around does in the rut and eventually something's going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even need to, like I said, get that right card pull, or you get those pictures always instantly from a cell cam. I mean, we've had a lot of luck, especially guiding over the years, just staying around doe groups. Eventually, mm-hmm. bucks, you know, that's the number one thing on their mind that time of year. So if you got that in front of you and around you, they're going to show up. I mean, it can be as simple as that.
Yeah, I think in that, what you're talking about, it may be even more where you use your tail cameras to figure out where you don't want to be hunting, because if you haven't seen that kind of activity and you're on a doe group, then yep. you know that eventually it's coming. Whereas if you do pull that card or you get those pictures on your phone where those bucks have already been in there and they've been chasing the does around, then you know, okay, maybe I should move on to the next one because I've already missed it, right?
Exactly. That's exactly a mistake a lot of hunters have made. I've made it myself. Like it just seems like if it hasn't happened within minutes to the past 48 hours, I mean, if it's older than that, usually it's a dead zone.
Yep. Yeah. And that's exactly what it seems to be too, because they come in there and they run around and they chase all the does out and they're so scared for their life that they're going somewhere to hide, and the buck's already yep. done with the area because maybe they've bred the doe that was hot in that area or whatever, and it's just a wasteland. You could go in. That's where you yep. have those hunts in even early to mid-November where it just, like, where'd all the deer go? I think a lot of times that's what has happened.
Absolutely. And like, you know, one thing, and I don't mean to kind of double back on it, but what I really want to emphasize during the breeding phase in the rut is just being aggressive, because mm-hmm. I've had, you know, times where I've maybe hunted travel corridors, or I'm hunting maybe not the hottest sign or hottest area, and it can be so frustrating. You either got to be in it where it's hot, or it's not happening. And you know, I talk sometimes a lot about being patient, but if there's a time of year when I think you got to be aggressive, like, you know, that November 5th to 15th period, at least for us, when a lot of breeding's being done, mm-hmm. you gotta find where that hot doe is. You gotta find where those bucks are clustered. Given the fact there's a hot doe in the area, and just keep bouncing around, keep changing your setups and going to new areas until you get on something like that.
Yep. Yep. I agree. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, which seems appropriate for having the Big Woods public ground guy on. I feel like, you cover a lot of ground traditionally. So we've hit some early season, some late season stuff, so a lot of rut stuff. So I'll let you get out of here, man. And, I appreciate you coming on. We'll for sure do this again. But before I do, make sure you let everybody know where they can find you. And if you got anything coming up in the magazines or anything, let them know. It'll be on the lookout for that too.
Yeah, just feel free to check me out on social media, either Facebook or Instagram at Shirk's Guide Service. And I should be in most of the issues this fall of North American Whitetail Magazine. I think I have 4 or 5 articles this year. And there'll be some really good content in there. I try to do, I don't know, anywhere from 3 to 5 pieces of, you know, of work for them every year. So, and that's honestly, you know, why I like to just get on podcasts and things like that. It's just, I love to, I love to share information. I love to see other hunters have success and, you know, mm-hmm. just learn better and enjoy hunting more overall. So, definitely get back in touch with me after the season, and wishing you guys a safe and successful season, everyone that's listening. And hopefully after the season, you know, we'll have another chat and we'll have nothing but good stories to tell.
Let's hope, man. We'll be watching from afar. So I hope hope you guys have a successful season as well. And good luck out there, man.
All right. Same to you. Take care.